Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me remind you again that my name is Anthony Pantone. I am the attorney for Tony Zarnik, plaintiff in the case. Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Zarnik, the person who is bringing this claim before you today, the plaintiff in this courtroom, Tony Zarnik is literally a world-famous scientist. He's one of the recognized leaders in his field of science. We'll hear he'd made many important scientific inventions. He's taught chemistry as a university professor for many years. He's frequently invited to do public speaking. He speaks at scientific symposiums and scientific seminars and conferences, and he's very prolific in terms of publications. He's published articles in leading scientific journals and leading scientific magazines. And that background, those things that I just told you about Tony Zarnik, is why, presumably, Illumina was attracted to Dr. Zarnik in the first place. You see, they contacted him to help join the company. In fact, help found the company. He was one of the founders of Illumina. And those things I described to you in terms of his background and accomplishments were presumably reasons why they were interested in him in the first place. There's two things about Dr. Zarnik. I call him Dr. Zarnik because he's got a PhD in chemistry. There's two things about Dr. Zarnik Illumina did not know when they brought him on board in the first place. First thing that they didn't know, you might be surprised to learn, that despite his accomplishments and despite his being an internationally recognized expert in this field, that Dr. Zarnik has a mental illness. It's a disease or an illness known as depression. As I said, Illumina did not know about this when they first brought him on board. A second thing that Illumina didn't know about Tony Zarnik was that he's too honest. When he sees something he doesn't like, when he sees something that's wrong, he mentions it. He complains about it. This case will involve two things that Dr. Zarnik saw that were wrong and that he complained about and that ultimately led to the termination of his employment. The first is, and I'll explain to you how, but when his colleagues found out that he suffers from depression, the people who founded the company along with Dr. Zarnik found out he has depression. They discriminated against him because of his depression, and he complained about it. The second thing is that when he was convinced the company, this is a scientific-based company, when he was convinced that the company was running sloppy scientific experiments, bad scientific experiments, at a time when he knew the company was trying to raise money to go public, and making misrepresentations about this bad science to potential investors would be wrong, he complained about it. He blew the whistle on this. So some things Illumina didn't know about him when they brought him on board, that he suffers from depression and he speaks up when something is wrong, I'm going to show you, hopefully through the evidence we present, that that led to his termination. There are three different claims in this case. You are going to be asked to decide each one of them. There are three separate claims. They are somewhat related because they are separate claims. You are going to have to make a decision on all three of them. The first is discrimination. The claim is that Illumina took negative employment action against Dr. Zarnik. I'll describe in detail what that is, but took negative employment information against Dr. Zarnik because they learned he has a mental illness. Now, Illumina has already stipulated, or agreed in legal terms, that they have agreed that Dr. Zarnik does suffer from depression. He has major depression, that he suffered from depression for many years, and they've agreed that depression is a disability for purposes of our laws that prohibit discrimination on the basis of disability. So you are going to have to decide a lot of issues in this case, but one of the issues you are not going to have to concern yourself with is, does Dr. Zarnik have depression, and is that a disability? The company has agreed and stipulated it is. The company, they took action against Dr. Zarnik because of his depression. A second claim is something commonly called retaliation. We're going to prove to you that Dr. Zarnik complained about discrimination internally inside the company and formally with the California State Agency that governs these matters. He complained about discrimination during his employment and Illumina retaliated against him, punished him for making that claim. Then the third claim. This is the claim Miss Kearns in her voir dire gave you the heads up is going to involve some science. Third claim in this case is commonly called whistleblowing. As I said, We're going to prove to you that Illumina also fired Dr. Zarnik in part because he was complaining about bad scientific experiments and the fact that Illumina shouldn't use those scientific experiments or conclusions from those scientific experiments when they were trying to raise money from investors when they were going public. He blew the whistle on that. Now, we've prepared a timeline that I think will help me explain to you what the evidence is going to be in the case that we think supports each one of those claims. We're going to try to walk through some of the key facts in the case. Hopefully, everybody can see the top line. We can put up the first slide, please. May 7th, 1998. That's when Dr. Zarnik signed his offer letter, agreeing to go to work for Illumina. Again, he was one of the founders of Illumina. He was one of the people who built this company from scratch. And I believe the evidence will show he was the first, I think the very first employee to sign this offer letter, agreeing to go to work for Illumina. Now, this offer letter is also important, and you'll see it in the case, because it specifically says Dr. Zarnik is a founder. And it says the company will recognize the fact that he is a founder, will respect that, will recognize it. You are a founder of this company. That's important, because we're going to show you later that after Dr. Zarnik disclosed that he has depression and started complaining about various things, the company didn't honor that commitment and no longer recognized him as a founder of the company. Next slide, please. June 11th, 1998. Dr. Zarnik starts his first day of work at Illumina. As I told you, when he started that day, no one affiliated with Illumina knew that he suffered from depression. Dr. Zarnik will tell you there's a certain stigma attached to depression. Depression is not something everyone understands, and it's certainly not something he was publicizing at the time. And when treated properly, as Dr. Zarnik was, with antidepressant medications, it doesn't affect one's ability to do the job or do it well. So when Dr. Zarnik joined Illumina, no one knew or really had to know that he suffered from depression. Now, at the very beginning of the company, there were basically three founders. I'll give you their names. Three founders who worked as senior managers. I'll give you their names because you're going to hear them again. They're going to testify, and they are key players in the case. Three initial senior managers who founded Illumina were John Stulpnagel, who was seated at the far end of defense counsel table. He was the acting CEO of the company. He was in charge of the company, running the company, and two key scientists who worked under him. One is Tony Zarnik, who was the chief scientific officer. That was his title, chief science officer. And he was in charge of chemistry. The other scientist was a person named Mark Chi. You'll learn more about him later. He was in charge of molecular biology. Basically, Dr. Stulpnagel running the company along with his two other co-founders, Dr. Zarnik and Dr. Chi. During this very initial stage of the company was being built. These three individuals, Dr. Stulpnagel, Dr. Chi, Dr. Zarnik, they worked together to plan the future of the company. They met together for strategic planning purposes. They decided what research and what experiments should be done, decided how they should go about raising money for the company. They decided what business opportunities to pursue. They basically, together, the three of them, mapped out a blueprint for the future of the company and the success of the company. And they all had big financial stakes in the company. They all, as you'll hear, had literally hundreds of thousands of shares of Illumina stock that they were able to acquire at a penny a share or a few pennies a share. So they all had big financial stakes in the company. Now, in these early stages, these formative stages the company was being built, Dr. Zarnik was allowed to participate. In fact, he was invited to participate. They wanted his input. They wanted his involvement. He was a meaningful member of senior management, and that, again, changed later. We'll show you evidence that after he disclosed depression, complained about it, complained about science, he was no longer treated as a meaningful member of senior management. Next slide, please. In November 1998, there was a discussion between John Stulpnagel and Tony Zarnik, and I'm going to get back to this discussion in a minute. I'll tell you something else that will relate to this. The next slide, please. April 6, 1999. Dr. Zarnik suffered what can only be described as a complete breakdown at work. As I said earlier, when he joined the company back in 1998, nobody knew, nobody had a clue he had depression. Events occurred in April of 1998, which I'll describe to you, which led to Dr. Zarnik disclosing the fact he does have depression. As of this date, April 6th of 1999, Dr. Zarnik was working on a project. It happened to be a grant application, basically an application to the government to get some money to fund some of the research that Illumina was doing. At this time, Dr. Zarnik suffered a very bad bout of depression. This occurred because his doctor had changed his medication. Some medications have sexual side effects. Medication Dr. Zarnik had been taking had sexual side effects, and his doctor changed his medication. The problem was, new medication wasn't effective. It didn't work. Dr. Zarnik sunk into what he describes as a very deep depressive episode. He's working on his grant application, and it was only a few days away, the deadline, from having it completed. And he found that he couldn't work on that project, couldn't write that grant application. And on April 6th, 1999, he suffered this breakdown. He broke down emotionally at the office. This internationally recognized expert, scientific expert, was literally in the office of John Stulpnagel crying. John Stulpnagel was there. Mark Chi was there, the other founders. Dr. Zarnik was emotional. He was crying. He said, "I can't work on this project." The evidence will show, ladies and gentlemen, that John Stulpnagel's response to that, seeing his co-founder broken down, crying in his office, was callous and hurtful and discriminatory. At this meeting with Dr. Zarnik, for the first time exhibiting any indication that he had depression, John Stulpnagel told him, "Hey, if the job is too stressful for you, you should consider leaving the company." He said other things which you'll hear at trial. So Dr. Zarnik asked for permission to go home that day, try to take care of himself. At that time, he didn't know what his role with the company was going to be, or really should be. He went home. Turns out he only missed one day of work. April 8th, 1999, Dr. Zarnik returned to work. He'll tell you why he missed only one day. His brother is a physician. His brother told him, "When you are experiencing very deep depression, sometimes taking an amphetamine will have a dramatic and quick effect on the depression." So Dr. Zarnik had an amphetamine. It was in the medicine cabinet for other reasons. He took it. He'll tell you he felt like Superman. Really worked. He came back on April 8th, 1999, ready, willing, and able to resume his duties, hopefully as a meaningful member of senior management. Now, when he returned to work on April 8th, 1999, the evidence will show that Dr. Zarnik was brave enough, or foolish enough, depending on your point of view, to tell his co-founders what had happened. He told them why he had broken down, why he had been crying, why he couldn't work, and he told them, "I suffer from depression. It's a disease. I've had depression for most of my working life, many years. It's treatable. I'm taking antidepressants, and I'm ready, willing, and able to return to my duties." If we go back a minute, back up to the November 1998 discussion, the reason I mention it is the defense is going to make a big deal about this discussion in November of 1998 because it happened before what I just told you. It happened before the breakdown, before the disclosure of depression. That discussion, November 1998, the defense is going to characterize as a counseling session or warning session to Tony Zarnik. It happened before the disclosure of depression. The evidence will show that this discussion in November of 1998 was about the company not making its goals, not meeting its performance objectives. The company was founded in May of 1998. By November of 1998, Dr. Stulpnagel felt we should be a lot further along than we are now. He blamed not Tony Zarnik. He blamed everybody, even including himself. It was a company problem. When you hear that evidence, bear in mind that it's not a counseling session directed at Tony Zarnik. It's a discussion about the entire company's progress. We'll move forward again. April 6th, the breakdown. April 8th, he discloses his depression. Now, next, April 11th, 1999, just a few days later, John Stulpnagel and Mark Chi discuss replacing Dr. Zarnik as CSO. Just 3 days after he disclosed the depression, they considered replacing him. Thought better of it, and they allowed Dr. Zarnik to remain at CSO, Chief Science Officer. At least they let him have the title. We're going to show you through evidence. The problem is they didn't allow him to act as a real chief scientific officer. They didn't allow him to have and continue to have a meaningful and real role in the company. Yet, he was invited to meetings after the disclosure. And we all know it's one thing to be at a meeting physically sitting there. It's another thing to be respected as a meaningful participant in the meeting. We're going to show you that after the disclosure, Dr. Zarnik was not allowed to be a meaningful participant in management. Now, Dr. Zarnik will testify that after he disclosed to Dr. Stulpnagel that he had mental illness, he had depression, after the breakdown, for literally weeks, Dr. Stulpnagel wouldn't even talk to him, didn't speak to him. They'd pass in the hall, he wouldn't make eye contact with him. They didn't communicate. Dr. Stulpnagel wouldn't communicate unless it was absolutely necessary, and then when he did communicate, it was typically email. For weeks this occurred, where Dr. Stulpnagel wouldn't even talk to Dr. Zarnik after the breakdown. Next slide, please. In late May of 1999, this was a Saturday, and both John Stulpnagel and Dr. Zarnik were working in the office on Saturday, they finally had a discussion. John finally sat down with Tony. And Tony Zarnik told John Stulpnagel he hoped they could put whatever differences they had aside, and he hoped they could work together again. And this did break the ice a little bit. It improved their relationship to the extent that John Stulpnagel was now at least talking to Tony Zarnik. But it didn't change anything else. It didn't change the fact that John Stulpnagel and Mark Chi were not allowing Tony Zarnik to serve in a meaningful way as chief science officer. So that was the situation at Illumina until the other gentleman sitting at council table, defense council table, Jay Flatley, came on board as the new chief executive officer, the new person running the company. John Stulpnagel stayed on board with the company. In fact, he still is with the company in a different senior position. But Jay Flatley became the new chief executive officer on October 18, 1999. Now, Mr. Flatley claims when he came on board, he had no idea that Tony Zarnik had depression. Even though the breakdown had occurred only a few months earlier, even though the disclosure had occurred only a few months earlier, even though the former CEO, John Stulpnagel, had actually talked about replacing Tony Zarnik, and now Tony Zarnik was going to report to Jay Flatley. Jay Flatley said, "Nobody told me anything about this breakdown. Nobody told me anything about depression. Nobody told me anything they were thinking about replacing Tony Zarnik." We're going to prove to you that's not true. Jay Flatley will claim to you that he came on board in October of 1999 with a clean slate with respect to Tony Zarnik. He will tell you that he had no plans to get rid of Tony Zarnik. He'll tell you he had no plans to replace him. He had no plans to fire him. Everyone was starting from scratch, including Tony Zarnik. Complete clean slate. Again, we're going to prove to you that's not true. Tony Zarnik did not have a clean slate with Jay Flatley. Next slide, please. About a week or two after Jay Flatley started as CEO, Dr. Zarnik asked Jay Flatley to have lunch with him. Tony Zarnik asked for this lunch because Jay Flatley really hadn't spent any time with him. Even though Tony Zarnik was chief science officer, Jay Flatley was chief executive officer, Tony Zarnik asked for this lunch. At this lunch, you'll hear about what was discussed. Nobody used the word depression at this lunch. When you hear the testimony, you will be convinced they were talking about depression without using that word. They were more cryptic about what they were talking about, his condition. There's a little bit of tap dancing going on, the evidence will show, but nobody actually used the word depression at that lunch. Later on, yes. Next slide, please. November 4, 1999. Mr. Flatley has a very important lunch meeting with the person named Larry Bach. Larry Bach is a venture capitalist. He was one of the investor founders of Illumina. He was on Illumina's board of directors. Larry Bach is a board member. You'll note this lunch occurred only a few weeks after Jay Flatley came on board, when Jay Flatley presumably was operating with his so-called clean slate with respect to Dr. Zarnik. Yet only a few weeks into the job, Jay Flatley tells Larry Bach he's got problems with Tony Zarnik and changes need to be made. The inference from this evidence is Jay Flatley had already made up his mind. There was no clean slate. Let's move on to the year 2000 now. January of 2000. This is a few months in the job for Jay Flatley. Mr. Flatley makes a presentation at a conference called H&Q Conference, important conference, where leaders of the company stand up and tell you about the company, give you background. Remember I told you before that Dr. Zarnik's offer letter said he's a founder? It's in black and white in the offer letter, and it's an historical fact. He was a founder. Yet on January 10th, 2000, in this public conference, Jay Flatley makes a slide presentation, similar to what I'm doing now, and he describes the company, he describes the background, and he lists the founders of the company, and he lists only Stulpnagel and Chi. Somehow, Jay Flatley found out Stulpnagel and Chi were founders, but didn't, claims he didn't know Tony Zarnik was a founder at the time. Tony complained about this, and Jay Flatley sent him an email saying, "Oops, that was an error. It was an oversight on my part. I didn't know you were a founder." We're going to show you evidence that that so-called error or mistake happened again, and happened again, and happened again, where Jay Flatley, knowing Tony Zarnik was a founder, didn't recognize that fact. Next slide, please. Also, in January 2000, the evidence will show that Jay Flatley took away job responsibilities from Tony. Tony was still chief science officer, but important job responsibilities are stripped from Dr. Zarnik in January of 2000. We're going to show you there was no legitimate reason for that. No legitimate reasons for stripping Dr. Zarnik of job responsibilities in January of 2000. The evidence will show that just like John Stulpnagel did, Jay Flatley didn't use Tony Zarnik as a real CSO, like a real chief science officer. He didn't use him as a sounding board on science matters. He didn't meet with him regularly. He didn't seek his input, didn't seek his advice. He didn't use him as a real CSO. So at some point in time, in the same time frame, January of 2000, Tony goes to Jay and says, "I'm willing to give up my CSO title. Take a different job with the company." The defense is going to emphasize Tony volunteered to give up his CSO title. And in part, that's true. He did go to Jay and say okay about my CSO title. But as I showed you before, the evidence will show you he was never really acting as a real CSO, never allowed to act as a true CSO once he disclosed his depression. Next slide, please. Early February, February 1st, 2000. Dr. Zarnik has a breakfast with a person named David Walt. David Walt is a board member. He's actually the person who invented the technology that the company was based on. He's the key inventor whose technology gave rise to Illumina. Dr. Zarnik has breakfast with David Walt, February 1st, 2000, and David Walt asks him a serious question. He says, "Are you still interested in staying at Illumina?" Dr. Zarnik answers emphatically, "Yes, I am still interested in staying at Illumina." Unbeknownst to Dr. Zarnik, plans were already underway to replace him as CSO. Next slide, please. February 4th, Jay Flatley contacted a person named David Barker about becoming the new CSO. Jay Flatley and Dave Barker had worked together at a prior company, so he contacts him and says, "Are you interested in joining Illumina?" A few days later, next slide, please. 3 days later, Dr. Zarnik and Jay Flatley have a dinner meeting. At this dinner meeting, there's some small talk and chit-chat. Jay Flatley talks about Tony Zarnik's depression. Again, he's going to claim he didn't know about depression. He didn't know in February Tony Zarnik had depression. Dr. Zarnik will describe his dinner meeting. One of the first things Jay does at this dinner meeting, he says, "How are you feeling? How is your depression?" Uses the word depression. He asks Dr. Zarnik, "Do you think your depression is caused by work?" So Jay Flatley did know about depression, and he talked to Tony Zarnik about it then. At the same dinner, Jay confirms, "Hey, are you still willing to give up your CSO title?" Dr. Zarnik says, "Yes, I'm willing to give up my CSO title, but I want to be involved in finding who the new CSO is. I'm a founder. I have a big stake in the company. I want to be involved in who the new chief science officer is." He asked Jay on February 7th, "Can I be involved?" And Jay Flatley doesn't even mention the fact that 3 days earlier he had already contacted somebody else about the CSO position. That person eventually became CSO. Next slide. February 28th, Dr. Zarnik sends an email to Mr. Flatley repeating his request again. "Please, can I be involved in finding a new CSO?" The next day, March 1st of 2000, day after that email, Jay Flatley tells Tony Czarnik he's no longer CSO and the new guy is starting the next day, David Barker. David Barker starts work as the chief science officer for Illumina on March 6, 2000. Tony Czarnik takes a different role with the company that I'll describe in a minute. Next slide, please. On March 15th of 2000, Illumina prepares a draft of what's called an S-1 registration statement. S-1 registration statement is an important government document that's prepared by the company, filed with the United States government, with the Securities Exchange Commission, the SEC, in Washington, D.C. And in this document, the first draft of the S-1 registration statement, where they describe the company and the background, in this document, Dr. Czarnik is described as, it says, Dr. Czarnik helped found Illumina. He was a founder. That might seem a minor distinction. It doesn't say founder, it says helped found. But in that document, Dr. Stulpnagel is called a founder. Mark Chi is called a founder. Tony Czarnik helped. Dr. Czarnik complained about that. He says, I'm a founder, equal footing with Stulpnagel and Chi. From that point forward, Dr. Czarnik wasn't shown any more drafts of this S-1 document. They didn't send him any drafts to comment on. Next slide. A few days later, March 21st of 2000, Jay Flatley sends an email to Dr. Czarnik. He attaches basically a new employment contract. Mr. Flatley wanted Tony Czarnik to sign a new contract that reduced his salary and slashed his stock dramatically, taking stock vesting away from Dr. Czarnik. Tony refused to sign the new contract. Jay Flatley became upset. Eventually, the evidence will show that Jay Flatley's own lawyers told him that it was illegal to make a stock change unless Tony Czarnik agreed to it. He wouldn't agree to it, so Jay Flatley couldn't cut his stock at that time. Next slide, please. April 3rd, 2000. Illumina files its first S-1 registration statement with the SEC. The first document I told you about was a draft. It hadn't yet been filed. This is the first actual filing with the SEC. Now, Tony Czarnik saw this draft, saw this filing, rather. Because it was filed with the government, it was available on the Internet, and he found it on the Internet. They weren't sending him any drafts anymore, but he saw this on the Internet. Now, this draft, Tony Czarnik is not mentioned as a founder. This draft, nothing even about help to found. This filing with the SEC, he's not even mentioned at all in terms of being a founder. Nothing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as a result of these events that I just described to you, Tony Czarnik felt that he was being discriminated against because he disclosed his depression. Tony Czarnik told Jay Flatley, I think you are discriminating against me. He also sent several emails. You'll have them in evidence. You'll see them. He sent several emails saying, this is wrong. You are discriminating against me. Next slide, please. April 3rd, the date he saw that S-1 on the Internet, he sent an email to Jay Flatley claiming discrimination. Next slide, please. April 5th, Dr. Czarnik sent another email to Jay Flatley. This one, he says, I'm not going to sign your new contract, and he again claims discrimination. By the way, Tony and Jay met to discuss this new contract, the one that would cut his stock, and when Tony Czarnik told Jay Flatley, I'm not going to sign a new contract, Mr. Flatley threatened him and said, do you know what this means? Tony Czarnik will testify he knew exactly what that meant. Next slide. April 18th, 2000. More emails about discrimination. Now, as you can see, Dr. Czarnik complained about discrimination on numerous occasions, orally, and then three emails, April 3rd, April 5th, April 18th. Illumina never investigated Dr. Czarnik's claim of discrimination. They have an HR department. They've got a policy manual. The company policy is any claims of discrimination we'll investigate thoroughly, and we'll investigate promptly. The evidence will show Illumina never even investigated this complaint internally. Next slide, please. I told you before, when Dr. Czarnik stepped down as CSO, he got a new job position, something called Research Fellow. Now, what I want you to understand about this Research Fellow position is that it's a purely science position, purely scientific responsibilities. The CSO job had science plus management duties. When he's made research fellow, his duties are purely science. So, who does he report to? The chief science officer. The new guy, David Barker. It makes sense. His job responsibilities are purely science. He should report to the chief science officer. And that's originally what happened. He reported to the new guy, David Barker. Now, there were no written goals in place. We talked during the jury selection about written goals. There were no written goals in place for this new position. It's a brand new position. So Tony Czarnik worked with David Barker, his new boss, and came up with a set of goals. And what I have on the easel here are the goals. It's hard to see, very hard to see, maybe impossible to see. But my point is that these goals were approved by David Barker, the new CSO. Tony Czarnik and David Barker worked together. They came up with these goals. David Barker said they are aggressive goals, but fair. So we thought these were going to be Tony Czarnik's goals. It turns out they weren't. We'll get to that in a minute. Next slide, please. Less than a week after Tony Czarnik and David Barker agree on these goals, there's an Illumina board meeting. And at this board meeting, Jay Flatley makes a statement to the board indicating that he's going to assign goals to Dr. Czarnik that can't be met. Jay Flatley told the board Tony Czarnik doesn't know it yet, but he's going to be getting goals that cannot be met. How do we know that? Dr. Czarnik wasn't at the meeting. We know that, next slide please, because 2 days after the board meeting, Dr. Czarnik had a telephone conversation with somebody who was at the meeting, David Walt, a board member. And David Walt told Dr. Czarnik what Jay Flatley said at the board meeting. He was going to get new goals that couldn't be met. David Walt is going to be a witness at this trial, being called by... He's going to be a witness at the trial. He may or may not admit to those statements. Tony Czarnik will tell you David Walt absolutely told him about Jay Flatley's statement to him. It's going to be up to you to decide credibility, who is telling the truth. Next slide, please. Within a week or two of that board meeting, the one we claim Jay Flatley said he's going to give him goals that can't be met, Jay Flatley changes the reporting relationship, says Czarnik is no longer reporting to the chief science officer, he's reporting to me, to Jay. He's the new boss on May 4th of 2000. Now this, I think you'll find to be a very curious decision on the part of Jay Flatley. Jay Flatley has no science background. David Barker has plenty of science background, and he's the chief science officer, and the goals that are being given to Czarnik are all science-related. Yet Jay Flatley says this person who has a science job is now going to report to him, not to chief science officer. Next slide, please. Same day, May 4th of 2000, Jay Flatley gives Dr. Czarnik a counseling memo. First counseling memo the man ever received from Illumina. On the same day, 5-4 of 2000, Dr. Czarnik then decides he's going to file a formal complaint of discrimination. We showed you the emails he had submitted earlier. Nothing happened. He's going to file a formal charge of discrimination with the government, with the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing. He's still working there, but he's going to file this charge. Next slide, please. They set a meeting, May 17th. Dr. Czarnik says, I'm going to schedule a meeting. The next day, May 18th, 2000, Tony Czarnik files his formal complaint of discrimination with the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, accusing Illumina formally, now with the government, of discriminating. Next slide, please. The very next day, May 19th, 2000, the day after he filed the charge, Mr. Flatley meets with Tony Czarnik and gives him new goals. Ultimately, this is what the company is going to say led to Czarnik's firing. I'm going to try to move this up a little bit. As I said, this was assigned to Dr. Czarnik the day after he filed his charge of discrimination. The evidence is going to show, ladies and gentlemen, that these new goals assigned by Tony Czarnik's new boss were a sham and were designed to set up a pretext upon which to fire Dr. Czarnik. The evidence is going to show, ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Flatley's own goals, 5-19-2000, discussed and given to Tony at a meeting. The evidence will show when Jay Flatley handed these goals to Tony Czarnik, he had already decided he was going to fire him. Jay Flatley will deny that. He'll tell you I had no preconceived idea I was going to fire him on May 19th when I handed him these goals. We're going to show you that he did. In legal terms, we call this a pretext. This is an excuse to fire Dr. Zarnik. Now, we'll take a look at the goals for a second. I'll first point out these were the old goals, the ones approved by Dr. Zarnik's first boss. Now, defense may point out there are more goals on this list, more rows, right? The new goals only have 3 rows. They're going to try to tell you those are easier goals, or at least not harder. There are only 3 here, there are many more here. We're going to prove to you that these goals were impossible, virtually impossible to meet, in particular, the second line. Illumina, as part of their technology, involves doing experiments called decoding. This second line is asking Dr. Zarnik to do something in a new area of decoding. I can't pronounce it. A binary oligo encoding. He's given 30-day goals, 60-day goals, 90-day goals, and year goals. On the 90-day goal, for example, on this line, to demonstrate binary oligo encoding. This 90-day goal asks him to show experimental feasibility of this process with 2 to the 12th power of codes. 2 to the 12th power is a number that's over 4,000. When you hear the testimony at trial, you'll understand, I believe, that that number is absurdly high. The company had been doing decoding from the very beginning, back in 1998. They had been doing decoding with a different method. At this point in time, May of 2000, the entire company, all the scientists working at the company, from the very beginning of the company, working together, hadn't shown the decoding to a number of 4,000. The entire company, every scientist from the beginning of the company until now, hadn't reached that number with a different way of doing the decoding. Illumina asked within 90 days, do it alone, by yourself, something that the entire company hadn't done in its entire existence. We submit that's an unreasonable expectation for one man to do in 90 days. And this year goal, that number, the library of all Tenmers, it's a big, big number. It's a number over 1 million. So the 90-day, 4,000. By the end of the year, 1 million. The evidence is going to show you that that is absurd, and that that was an excuse to ultimately fire Dr. Zarnik. One more thing I want to point out about these goals. First line and the third line are basically already on this chart. They added the killer goal, goal number 2, but they made an interesting addition to the third line. The third line, contribute to company IP portfolio. That was on the original goal. Contribute to company IP portfolio. But you see, they added one thing to that line. They added submit a grant application. It's no accident that they added that. Remember I told you what the breakdown was about? April 6th of 1999, he broke down when he was working on a grant application. That was the incident that caused him to be crying in John Stulpnagel's office. For some reason, they attempted to subtly tack that on. Next slide, please. May 22nd, Dr. Zarnik sends an email to Jay Flatley saying these goals are unfeasible. Tony talked to Jay. Jay stated, proceed with those goals. And again, Jay Flatley is going to tell you he hadn't decided. He's going to claim he hadn't decided to fire Dr. Zarnik as of May. We're going to prove to you he had already decided to fire him. Next slide, please. Despite the fact that the goals were unreasonable, Dr. Zarnik began working on the goals. June 30th of 2000, he sends Jay Flatley some initial work on the project, work that he had done to prepare a plan to try to achieve these goals. Next slide, please. Now, Jay Flatley made himself Tony Zarnik's boss. We told you he decided no longer report to the CSO, he's going to report to me. He made himself Tony Zarnik's boss, even though he wasn't going to be available to supervise him. For reasons I'll tell you in a minute, he wasn't even going to be around Illumina. July 3rd, he goes on vacation. Next slide, please. July 10th, something called a roadshow begins. You'll be hearing about this roadshow. This is a traveling presentation, a traveling series of presentations where Jay and other members of Illumina management met with people who might be investing money in the initial public offering. The company was planning on going public. So a roadshow is a series of meetings, city after city after city, where they make presentations about the company and why people might think about investing in the IPO. This roadshow lasted the entire month of July. So Jay Flatley, Tony's new boss, wasn't even around to supervise him on this project. Next slide. In any event, since Jay is his boss, he sends him an email on July 12th attaching his plan, his work plan, to go about trying to achieve these goals. Now, I want to speak a little bit about the whistleblowing claim because it relates directly to this roadshow that I mentioned. We're going to present evidence to you, ladies and gentlemen, that Dr. Zarnik was fired not only because of his disclosure of depression and the fact he complained about depression, but he was also fired because he was complaining about the scientific matter in the context of this roadshow that was happening. The evidence is going to show you that Dr. Zarnik was critical and complaining about certain sloppy science from the beginning of his employment all the way up through and including the time of the roadshow. But this issue really came to a head during the roadshow in an experiment, a key experiment called the 768 Decode Experiment. This slide relates to the 768 Decode Experiment. This is a number, 768, that corresponds somewhat to, remember I told you he was being asked to show 4,000 codes. This was an experiment using a different method or methodology that dealt with 768. Now, one of the things that Illumina's technology does is identify different types of DNA. One step in this process is called decoding. We're talking about it in this experiment. Now, this decoding experiment used three different colored dyes. This will be really important when I tell you what happened with this experiment. The experiment uses fluorescent dyes, and in this one, there were three different colors, blue, green, and red. Now, one of the main point of the decoding, to determine how the decoding works, you've got to see what color each spot lights up. That's the whole point of this experiment. There's a series of decoding steps. Each step, they have to determine what color lit up, blue, green, or red. What makes it light up this way is that dye I told you about, fluorescent dye that's used. That's what makes these colors light up. The whole point is to determine, does a spot light up blue, green, or red in this experiment? Now, it turns out this experiment, the 768 decoding experiment, was a mix-up with one of the dyes. The vendor they bought the dye from put the wrong label on some bottles, on some lots of dye, and there were labels on the bottle that said green priginal. The transcript read used. That's when, in fact, the dye inside the bottle was red. And inadvertently, some of this mislabeled dye was used in conducting this experiment. They thought they were using green because that's what the bottle said. In fact, some of the green was actually red. Now, we contend that this obviously screwed up this experiment. Dr. Zarnik thinks so. He's an expert in fluorescence, which is what this concerns. He's going to tell you that it's important, if you're going to use green dye, that there actually be green dye in the bottle. We submit that you are going to hear evidence from Illumina scientists that will be scientific double talk to try, designed to confuse this issue. We're going to show you, Dr. Zarnik will tell you, it does matter. When you're trying to find what spot lights up green, it matters that you use green dye. Now, I said Dr. Zarnik was a whistleblower. To be a whistleblower, a person has to complain about something they reasonably believe is illegal. What evidence are we going to show you that something illegal may have been going on here, or that Dr. Zarnik had a belief that something illegal was going on here? Doing a bad experiment alone is not illegal. What makes it illegal is if a company uses bad scientific results or draws conclusions from bad scientific experiments when they are trying to raise money in an IPO, when they are trying to encourage people to invest money in the company, when they are on a roadshow. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the evidence is going to show is what Dr. Zarnik believed was occurring at Illumina. Next slide, please. On July 13th, 2000, Mark Chi sent an email to the roadshow team. This is while they were on the roadshow trying to convince investors to spend their money to buy stock. Mark Chi attached this slide to his email, the one I just showed you, and he sent it off to the roadshow team. The evidence will show he did that for possible use by the roadshow team in connection with the actual roadshow presentations. He sent a copy to several people, including everybody on the roadshow. Of course, he didn't send a copy of this to Dr. Zarnik. Next slide, please. On July 24th, this is still during the roadshow I described, Molecular Probes, that's the vendor who sells the dye to Illumina, they sent a letter to the company regarding this mislabeled dye. Now, Dr. Zarnik found out that this had happened. He found out about the mislabeling on the dye. He knew that the experiment was being conducted for purposes of the roadshow. He thought it was likely, in fact, he thought it did happen. He thought it was likely these results would be sent to the roadshow team, and he blew the whistle. Dr. Zarnik spoke to Mark Chi, who was the person in charge at Illumina during the roadshow. Flatley was on the roadshow, again. He appointed Mark Chi as the person in charge of the company. Dr. Zarnik talked to Mark Chi, told Mark Chi the results of this experiment were not reliable because of the mix-up in the dye. He told Mark Chi he should contact the roadshow team immediately because they shouldn't be relying on this experiment. And he told Mark Chi if he didn't do that, he could be defrauding investors at the roadshow. A few weeks later, Dr. Zarnik was fired. Next slide, please. July 2000 is the date of the initial public offering. Illumina goes public. I'll show you what the result of going public was. Flatley sends an email to everybody at Illumina. The good news? Illumina raised in this initial public offering $100 million. That's what was at stake here. That's what we are going to show you motivated Jay Flatley and others to fire Dr. Zarnik because of his whistleblowing about this matter. That day, $89 million is deposited into Illumina's bank account, total of $103 million raised at the roadshow. Now on the day of the IPO, the day the company went public, Illumina had a contingent right there on the NASDAQ floor to commemorate the occasion, celebrate the occasion. Jay Flatley was there to celebrate. John Stulpnagel was there to celebrate. Mark Chi, one of the other founders, who wasn't even on the roadshow, they flew him to New York to celebrate. There was one senior manager founder who wasn't asked to go to New York to celebrate. Next slide, please. August of 2000. August 1st, Jay Flatley gives Tony Zarnik his first written feedback on his progress toward the 30-day goals. This was about 2 months after he gave the goals to Dr. Zarnik to begin with. August 1st, he gives his first written feedback. Next slide. A week later, to make up for lost time, he gives Dr. Zarnik his feedback on his 60-day goals. Next slide, please. August 15, 2000, Illumina's response to Dr. Zarnik's complaint of discrimination. This was nearly 3 months after he filed the complaint. And again, the evidence will show Illumina never bothered to investigate his complaint internally at all. Next slide. August 25, 2000, Dr. Zarnik sends an email to David Walt. Again, David Walt is the inventor of the technology. He's on the board of directors. And Dr. Zarnik implores David Walt to please dig into this decoding problem. And make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen, the evidence will show this decoding was a big, big problem at Illumina. September 1st, Jay Flatley speaks at a company-wide meeting. He's talking to all the employees. He describes decoding as being a problem that's a 4 on a scale of 1 to 3, with 3 being worst. This is a 4. This is off the scale. Fixing decoding is the biggest problem at Illumina at that time. Next slide, please. September 5th, 2000. Dr. Zarnik sends an email to Mark Chi about this problem, about the roadshow decoding experiment. Next, please. September 5th, 2000. Dr. Zarnik sends an email to Jay Flatley about the decoding problem. Now, Illumina, I think, is going to claim this was some last-minute attempt by Dr. Zarnik to make something out of nothing. The evidence is going to show you this was a big problem, and Dr. Zarnik was talking about sloppy science and bad science at the experiments for a long time, not just at the end of his employment. Next slide. September 5, same day. Tony Zarnik is fired. Now, the official reason Jay Flatley gave Tony Zarnik when he met with him was that he didn't meet the goals. These goals. That's the official reason he gave Tony Zarnik. He didn't meet his goals. Again, we're going to show you these were unreasonable to begin with and that he had already decided to fire him way back in May. But that was his official reason. However, at the termination meeting, we'll make sure you can read this. These are Jay Flatley's own notes. The evidence is going to show, ladies and gentlemen, these notes were a result of a discussion that Jay had with Jennifer Kearns, the company's lawyer, that they worked together to essentially write a script of what to tell Tony Zarnik when he was fired. These are notes in Jay Flatley's own writing, and they were used as I said, basically a script of what to tell Dr. Zarnik at the termination meeting. Now, the first line of the notes. Again, this is said to him on September 5th when he was fired. First line. First thing Jay Flatley talks about at the termination meeting, it's a little hard to follow, but I understand you have expressed some strong opinions in the last few days about the state of decoding. Decoding is the experiment we talked about. We submit there is a connection, a strong connection, between Tony Zarnik complaining about this decoding and the termination meeting. This was what Jay Flatley said. He did more than say, I understand you've been raising some concerns about decoding. He went on to threaten Tony Zarnik. If you tell anyone outside the company about this reagent problem, we're going to come after you with everything we have. Ladies and gentlemen, let me talk to you just for a minute or two about the damages that Tony Zarnik suffered as a result of the termination. I told you before that he had acquired stock at the beginning of his employment at a penny a share or few pennies a share. This is a letter that Illumina sent to Dr. Zarnik about a week after they fired him. It basically says we're going to buy back some of the shares of stock. Illumina had a written contract with Dr. Zarnik that said if you were no longer employed, basically said as he's being employed, he gets to keep certain chunks of stock that he had bought at the beginning of his employment, bought it all on day one or early on in his employment. As he works, Illumina no longer can buy it back from him. But the contract said that if you were terminated, anything that hadn't vested yet, we can buy back from you. We can buy it back at the original purchase price of a penny a share. So September 12th, they write to Dr. Zarnik and basically say, we're buying back 226,000 shares of common stock and another 25,000 shares that you had. We're buying it back at the original purchase price of a penny a share, or 9 cents a share. And they sent Dr. Zarnik a check for $4,500. On September 12, 2000, based on the closing price of Illumina stock on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange, public stock exchange, based on the closing price that day, the shares they bought back for $4,500 had a fair market value of over $10 million. So, pursuant to the report, Dr. Zarnik is going to tender back his shares, trading publicly for $10 million. He gets a check for $4,000. Ladies and gentlemen, when Miss Kearns gets up to make her closing, I'm sorry, her opening statement, maybe her closing too, but when she stands up to make her opening, she's going to say something like, I predict, there's no evidence of discrimination in this case. That's what defense lawyers typically say in discrimination cases. That's because there very rarely is direct evidence of discrimination. Employers don't say, we're doing this to you because you are a woman, or we're doing it to you because of your race, or we're doing it to you because of your age or your disability. They don't say that. You are not going to have that in direct testimony from anybody. You are not going to see an email. Employers don't say that. You will see plenty of evidence in this case. Some direct evidence, some what we call circumstantial evidence, but plenty of evidence that shows that Dr. Zarnik was discriminated against, retaliated against, and fired because he blew the whistle, and he was not fired legitimately for failure to meet those goals. Thank you.
We'll take a recess. We'll be in recess until 3:30. Please remember the admonition, do not form or express any opinions about the case. Do not discuss the case among yourselves or with anyone else. We'll be in recess until 3:30. Leave your notepads on your chairs. They'll be there for you when you get back.